8:13, and joining me now in the studio, Summit County Council Member Glenn Wright. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
And just we went from lightning and thunder to pouring down rain, and it's coming down pretty good here in Old Town. So be careful out there. Roads could be slick. Want to talk to you first before we get into some of the agenda items. The notion here about well, you're a city resident, so
yeah,
you're paying not only city property taxes but also county property taxes. I mean, how do you feel about that concern about maybe city residents taking on more than their fair share?
How do I feel about that? The county has a budget that services the entire county, and the residents of Park City have to contribute to that. The elements of the county budget, really, we don't provide municipal services to Park City. Park City does that themselves. But the element that's in the county tax increment is on overall county tax. Overall county services, like mental health, which they were discussing. So I think that's pretty much an invalid comment from the Park City Council. We have actually similar issues with them on how the transit systems run. We're providing a majority of the money for the transit system and have absolutely zero input on the management of the system.
Yeah, but when we talk about funding paying half for this mental health director positions, mm-hmm. you know, it's really that we're, as a city resident, paying about three quarters of that position. When it impacts, I mean, it's then other unincorporated areas mm-hmm. receiving the services from that person.
Park City has to make their decision on what they're going to do there. I'm not going to weigh into what their budget looks like and how they spend their money, and I hope they don't do the same to us.
Okay. How are things? I know that there were some negotiations going on with regard to transit. Are those moving forward?
They're ongoing. I can't say anything more than that. We'll be having some serious discussions this summer.
Okay. Public sessions?
Wouldn't surprise me if the county council actually has a work session. Because on these issues, we can't discuss them as a body unless we discuss it publicly. You know, we can't have a closed session on transit negotiations.
Right, as a group, but you could have kind of a subcommittee.
But we have to have one-on-one discussions with each other. So if we're going to get all five of us together to discuss the issue, I would suppose we would eventually, at some point this summer, have a work session on it that everyone can listen to.
Yeah, so are you on some kind of subcommittee, though? It's meeting.
I was on JTAB the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. Kim Carson replaced me in the last year as we reshuffled jobs earlier this year. I'm the alternate, so if either Doug or Kim can't show up, I'm the alternate for JTAB.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about, you heard from a couple of the supporters behind Proposition 2 to legalize medical marijuana in the state of Utah. They're asking the council to get some input, to take some input on mm-hmm. this. Is that something that the council will schedule?
Speaking for myself, I think we will. We haven't made a decision on that, but I think it's generally a good idea to hear from the public on how they would like us to be involved in the process, if at all.
Yeah. Do you agree with their point that basically we're putting the county health department in?
Yes, I absolutely do. That point that they're making is absolutely correct, and we've heard exactly the same thing from Rich Bulla early this year. Right after. HB 3001 was passed, he started throwing up the red flags with us. He's very concerned about that.
What is the impact of House Bill 3001 on the county health department?
Well, there's an issue called federal preemption. And under federal rules, cannabis is still a Schedule I drug. Potentially, we could lose all federal funding and face criminal penalties for the people who administer the medical cannabis program in the county. From my standpoint, and I think from most of the council members, I think that's an unacceptable risk.
And lawmakers know that, though, right?
Yes, they should know it. That's what they get paid for.
Yeah. You noted yesterday that you voted for Prop 2, even gave it some financial
I did.
Support.
I'm fully behind it. Before I was on the council, I had some more time, and I, I was spending a fair amount of time skiing with the NAC and the Wounded Warrior program at Park City Mountain Resort. And I skied with kind of as a mountain guide for the Wounded Warriors, just kind of free skiing out with them. And a lot of the guys I ran into were TBI and PTSD victims. And they were doped up on handfuls of pills every day. They all hated the treatment they were getting because they felt dull. And I think there's some pretty good studies that show that medical cannabis has positive effects on, especially on neurological issues, and the calming impact of it. I think we are really selling our veterans short by not having that option for them.
Let's see, some other general topics. The Kimball Junction Master Plan was postponed to June 19th. Basically, we had Chris Robinson absent. Mm-hmm. Roger Armstrong had to leave before that could be decided. What improvements do you want to see out of a Master Plan?
I think the Master Plan has some really good ideas, and we have to understand that it's a vision for what Kimball Junction look like. If I could plunk down a vision of what I could say, maybe something people have seen. Anybody skied at Whistler Village? It's kind of a walking village. Could we devise a mixed use development there that had not necessarily ski related, but business and potentially resort related activities? Because there's some thought about having a lift up to the UOP. And have most of the activities within that area accessible through pedestrian and biking activities. And that would include creating real nice pedestrian crossovers with the rest of Kimball Junction on the east side of Route 224. Part of what we really want to do is we need to control the traffic going through that intersection, get rid of the traffic lights, possibly create some overpasses or underpasses. You know, that design is still years off. You know, we have to get this process started, start our development process there, and work with UDOT on what the solutions might be to that. But my vision is that entire area would be a really pleasant walking, pedestrian, biking community where you can, if you drive in, there's a central parking, and then you can do all of your business or activities in that area, either on public transit, on the circulator we have, an expanded circulator, or via walking or bicycling.
Yeah, so does this plan, though, get us there?
That's a good question. I think, as I said, it's a vision. When we had the discussion on the Crandall property across from New Park, one of the elements of that packet was the 98 plan. The 98 plan was great. We just didn't execute it very well. So there are lots of things that we can do. There's going to be lots of opportunities for the community to weigh in on mixed use, on density, on height, on designs of what the area is going to look like. We have one more chance to get it right. It's going to take, you know, the process will probably take several years, but now's the time to start.
Yeah, we both live in Prospector, and we both know that we can travel to Kimball Junction and shop there without a car, but it's like, why?
Right.
Because who has all day to do that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the reality of it.
And the reality is, you and I will not go to Kimball Junction on public transit other than when it's really busy. During Sundance last year, I left my car in the garage. I used it when I was going out of town. I was completely on public transit because we had those kind of crowding situations. And it worked pretty well. I actually went to county meetings down at the Richens Building during that period of time. I traveled the entire western side of the county on our public transit system, and it worked very well during Sundance. Except for the times when we had gridlock on powder days getting to the mountain. That's something we're going to have to solve also.
Yeah. And, you know, riding an electric bike, that works really well. It's easy to get around. Mm-hmm. One, though, there's not a lot of bike racks. And then, two, some trails just, like, end. You know, they dead end. So.
And that's part of the approach we talked about during last week's meeting on the active transportation program. We need to do better there. Improve our trails, improve, you know, the availability of bike racks, signage particularly. for somebody who doesn't ride their bike around the community all the time, it's easy to get lost. Yeah, I ride my bike extensively, so I kind of know where to go. But I can see where a tourist coming in and hopping on our electric bikes, where am I now?
Let's see. You also got an update on House Bill 411 and the 100% renewable operations for the county. What you talk a little bit about the next steps. So where are we headed?
The next steps, there are two of them that Lisa Yoder talked to us about. One is for the community process. And there is now a schedule of events with our common applicants, Salt Lake City, Park City, and Rocky Mountain Power, and other environmental organizations. We'll talk about these issues, but also have discussions with the Public Service Commission. And I don't remember all the details of this of the calendar. There's half a dozen or more dates that run through about the middle of November, when we should have a pretty good idea what the rates are going to look like, at least preliminary. What has to happen after that is you actually go out to RFPs, and then you get some harder ideas on what the rates are going to be. I think the other thing Lisa talked about is really more enlightening. We've already had RFPs out on purchasing 100% renewable energy for county operations. Park City has the same RFP out, as do, I think, the ski resorts. And they're all going to make we're all going to make our own decisions on that. Where that is on Wednesday next week, we get the roughly 70 offers that were made to us has been whittled down to 10, and we've asked for best and final offers from them. And then we'll go, our staff will go through a screening process and present that to the council sometime in the middle of the summer. And that will be really an indication of what our community rates, I think, will be down the road. Because it's essentially the same RFP process looking for the same types of results.
I noticed Rocky Mountain Power ready to break ground on their Energy Vision 2020 wind project. Is that something that Summit County's involved in, or we're just talking about a solar farm?
We are not involved in that. I looked at the spreadsheet of the proposals for us. None of them were part of that. That's part of their overall corporate goals of repowering their wind farms in Wyoming. They also announced in the last couple of weeks early shutdown of four coal plants in Wyoming and how they're going to address that. And that's going to be done with a combination of solar and initially gas, but by the mid-20s, solar and battery.
Okay. I just wanted to get your reaction to the story that ran about all of the dead deer there at the landfill. It sounds like we've got a problem not only with plastic bags, but latex gloves.
Yeah. Yes, we do. It's a big problem, and we're going to definitely have some plastic bag discussions about reducing the use of plastic bags in the county. That's not going to be the entire answer, though. We have to get people to, when they throw their bags away, try to recycle them, take them back to the store where you got them from. I take mine to Recycle Utah. You and I live close to that, so it's easier for us to do it. I don't expect someone in Summit Park or Jeremy Ranch to drive all the way, or to Colville or Camas to drive to Recycle Utah to do that. But we've got to get better ideas on how to put plastic. If you're going to put it in the garbage, weight it down, tie it up, put it inside of a bigger container. It's not going to blow around.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I think that's great for today, Leslie. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Summit County Council Member Glenn Wright. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:28. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Heber City continuing to experience growth and change. On the phone to speak about some ongoing issues and upcoming plans for Heber City, I have Heber City Manager Matt Brower. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Lovely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Let's first just talk about the controversy at this week's council meeting regarding the pride banners hung on Main Street. Can you explain to us how these flags and any flags would get approved for hanging?
It's the city's practice when we receive a request to hang a pole banner is to first ensure that there's no request preceding it. And then if the request is found objectionable, it's usually raised to my attention or to the mayor's attention. In this case, it was raised to the mayor's attention. The mayor feels passionately about the youth of our community and is very concerned about the suicide epidemic amongst LGBT youth. You may or may not be aware, but the number one cause of death for youth ages 10 to 17 in Utah is suicide. And she wants no more youth to consider suicide and wants no more families to be impacted by that. And is hoping the flags will raise attention to this crisis.
Yeah, so hanging these flags any different than, say, hanging flags for the cowboy poetry event?
Well, these flags are obviously somewhat controversial, but the mayor feels very strongly that there is a public crisis, and she wants to bring attention and awareness to it.
So they'll stay up as approved then, right?
Yeah, I think they will stay up through mid-June or later part of June, and then, of course, we'll move into the celebration of our country's birth and have additional flags put up honoring our country.
Yeah, some citizens express concerns about the precedent that the Pride banners may have set. Is there any direction from council or any consideration about changing the policy for what banners can be hung on Main Street?
I imagine that the council will want to debate a policy for pool banners in the near future. Council asked staff some time ago to look at banners that are placed on open spaces in city parks. So I imagine there will be a conversation taking place with council in the very near future.
All right. The Envision Heber 2050 project, at a critical point, conducting a survey of residents. How's that going?
We are absolutely excited about our initiative that we have branded Envision Heber 2050. This is an initiative to update the city's general plan that was last updated in 2003. This is an initiative that we're trying to get all residents and all stakeholders excited about and to participate in. We've had two public meetings. We have a website dedicated to this effort, and on that website is a 29-question survey that we hope all residents will take.
So what do you want to know from residents?
We want to know from residents what they think about the future growth in Heber. What we do know is that Heber has had a history of growth, and it will have a future of growth. So the question is, what do we want that growth to look like, to feel like? And that's the feedback we want from residents.
Some have complained that the Envision Heber project looking at growth outside of the city boundaries. Should Heber be looking outside of the boundaries as part of this project?
What we're looking at is what we're calling our area or zone of influence, the area around the city that will ultimately influence us and that we can have influence over. Remember, this is a 2050 vision, and so it's quite likely the city will annex areas outside the city, so it makes complete sense in my mind's eye to look at these areas and see how they could be planned.
Yeah. Where do things stand with the Sorensen property? Has that annexation been accomplished, or are you still considering it? Or
As of today, I'm not aware that we've received a petition, at least the city recorder has not received a petition for the annexation. Recall that state statute has a very long process the petition has to go through before the council can actually consider its approval. And so we've not received it, as I'm aware of this morning. But I imagine we'll receive it very soon.
Okay, so it's the landowner that has to make the request, huh?
In this case, that is correct.
Okay, but it is within your annexation declaration boundaries?
It is. The city adopted what's called an annexation policy plan, which is required by the state, and in that plan identifies this area as a potential annexation area.
That could, like, double the size of Heber City, huh? I mean, how much acreage?
You know, it could. It's interesting. During the Wasatch-backed Economic Summit held on May 30th, there was a presentation that identified no less than six major developments in and around the Jordan Elle Basin, with the Sorensen project being one of those. So although it's a large project, it is but one of a half dozen that will take place in the area north of the city.
Yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the projects on the horizon for the next year or three?
I imagine Sorensen will be one of the bigger ones. I do expect to receive a petition for annexation in the very near future. The county already entitled it at 5,500 units, and I imagine that's going to take a lot of time and effort to assess that project and assess the benefits to the city. Another project is called the VXC that's located on Highway 40 and Coyote Lane. This project was reviewed by council last Tuesday and an annexation agreement actually approved. So most of the growth in the future of the city is going to look to the north, northeast as we look into the future.
Okay. I see the council also heard a report from New City Airport Manager Travis Biggs regarding the airport master plan update. What's the latest with the airport?
The city is intending to work in cooperation with the FAA to update the master plan that was last updated in 2003. The purpose of the master plan is like a business plan. It is to help us make sound financial decisions for the airport. Many have said, well, if you're going to do a master plan update, you're obviously going to expand the airport, and that's simply not true. The update of the airport master plan is a necessary element to ensure that we're operating the airport in the most efficient and effective way we possibly can. This effort is expected to kick off probably in the August timeframe, and we're excited about it, and it will be a very public and a very transparent process.
And then what about the lawsuit against the airport operator? The council withdrew that?
I wish we were in settlement. We still have a lawsuit, and we're working hard behind the scenes to try to settle that. We're working very hard to try to come to terms. And, of course, I can't disclose a lot about that at this time.
Right. The idea, though, is that a master plan is really kind of needed before a lawsuit could move ahead if it needed to?
No, they're unrelated. The master plan update is really unrelated to the lawsuit that's in place now. The master plan update is a necessary element of running our airport business, and the lawsuit was, of course, been in place now for some time.
All right. Also, what's the update on the construction of the Eastern Bypass? And this is the one that Red Ledges is involved in.
That is correct. The city is negotiating an agreement with Red Ledges to bring about a portion of the Eastern Bypass sometime before May of 2021. We expect that agreement to be on the June 18th agenda for possible adoption.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I do. As you probably know, today is the 75th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. Just want to give a shout-out to our veterans and all the amazing things they do for our amazing country.
Okay. Matt, appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
Matt Brower is the manager of Heber City. You're listening to the Local News Hour. Well, if you've never ridden the Park City Transit buses before, next week may be the right time to hop on. Alexis Versen and Marilee Hewitt from Park City Transit join me now to talk about Tri-Transit Week. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so let's see. Do you want to start then, Alexis, and just tell us how the city is encouraging Park City and Summit County residents to Tri-Transit?
Absolutely. So next week we have Tri-Transit Week. This is the second Tri-Transit Week that we have had this year. We did one right before Sundance to remind people to ride during the peak winter season. We're doing it again this year. One, to highlight our new summer bus schedule, which starts tomorrow. Marilee's going to touch on that a little bit more. And also, as a reminder, that it's a great way to access events like Park Silly Market, 4th of July celebrations, the Arts Fest, things like that. We are offering to riders this upcoming week really cool swag for free if they're riding the bus. City and county council members will be riding during the week, handing out sustainable stainless steel water canteens, flashing pedestrian safety beacons, as well as some fun items like glasses and goggles, cleaners, stickers, buttons, and we are also offering gift cards to local businesses again this summer.
Okay, so Marilee, if people are driving into town, where should they park their cars to hop on a bus?
Well, we have, they're doing, probably the high school would be a good location. I believe the resorts.
We have several park and rides to access Park City. The Ecker Hill Park and Ride, newly built out at the county, is a great facility for hopping on a bus and riding in. We also have Campbell Junction. There are a variety of options. It sort of depends on the event, and we try and push that messaging for each event of where to park and hop on a bus.
Okay. Homestake is closed, though, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. And it seems that visitors utilize transit more than residents do. Why is it difficult, do you think, to get those who live in town on a bus?
I think a lot of our residents are riding. I think some of the challenges may be with later service into the evening, and sort of the time that it takes to ride a bus sometimes if you're running errands, if you have to pick up your kids from school. And that's something that we're working on improving. For example, during some of our events, we're having a bus-only lane, so you don't have to sit in congestion in your car, and it's actually much faster to access Old Town and some of these events by bus.
Okay. Tri-Transit Week will also be highlighting the services changes coming this summer. Those start when, Marilee?
Tomorrow. Yes, so Friday, and the main service changes will be that the Orange Silver Lake service will start up, and that will operate from 10 a.m. to 5:30 from the Old Town Transit Center. And then the red and green in-town service will be extended to approximately midnight. So the last time from the transit center for the red, departing time will be 11:54, and then for the green will be 11:44. And all of our transit information is online at our transit website at parkcitytransit.org, so you can find more details about that.
Okay, I haven't seen yellow buses running. Do we have that Main Street Express back?
No, typically the yellow buses drop out in spring because we just... You know, those are added service that we provide during the winter to balance the loads for winter traffic and things like that, mm-hmm. and passenger loads.
And why does the schedule change every season? I mean, I guess it would seems like it would just be a lot easier to get people to ride the bus if they always knew what the schedule was going to be. I mean, when we see 2, 3, 4 changes a year, it's confusing.
That is one thing that we're working toward, is to have a more consistency in our service and reduce the number of changes. But that takes, some of that takes time. You know, it's funding and there is a process in that. But we are working at that, and some of the changes that we have made are probably more subtle, but a lot of them have occurred in our route timings and things like that, so that the same times for the red and green route, for example, we maintain those from winter to summer now. That's what we've been working to achieve.
Okay. Alexis, the Transportation Department also working to improve some widely used bus shelters in town. What kind of improvements are we going to see, and which ones are getting those improvements?
That's a great question, Leslie. So we have a couple that we are hoping to install this fall. We are just at the very beginning of our process, so we haven't done any, we haven't done a lot of outreach on this yet, but we're looking to improve the Park Ave stops by AFresh and the Park Ave condos this year. That's going to include new bus shelters. We're also exploring adding amenities like bike racks, possibly ski tune-ups for people who are waiting to get on the bus. We are also widening the sidewalk, hopefully, on Park Avenue so that there's enough room for pedestrians and people to wait for the bus and ADA access. And then our next effort with that is a system-wide accessibility study. So we're going to look at all of the stops in the system and determine how to prioritize those improvements. And it's going to be based on the number of boardings, how popular the stop is, what sort of amenities are lacking. If they don't have a shelter or a pad or a bench for people to wait at, we're going to prioritize those ones.
Okay. Are we adding any new ones or just refurbishing those that we have?
I believe we're just refurbishing the ones that we have.
Okay. All right. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
I guess I could add that with the service change tomorrow, we, for the Empire service and Silver Lake service, we will be putting out our buses with bike racks installed. So we'll have stations set at the transit center for people loading. There are kind of some requirements. There are only 6 people allowed per bus because the bikes have to be secured. So it's first come, first serve. And hopefully everyone, hopefully that works really well. And
yeah, it's a great way to access trails.
We love
it.
You can
put your bike on a bus and head out.
Yeah.
You're looking for parking.
Yeah, it works really great when you can put more than 6 on, too.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is I know that sometimes that seems limiting, but we kind of have to balance the loads between passenger safety and the bikes, carrying the bikes as well.
Okay. Hey, Marilee and Alexis, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:46. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, later this month, the Park City High School debate team traveling to Dallas, Texas to compete in the National Debate Championships. In the studio with me, I have the new coach who will be traveling with the team, Gavin Sear, along with longtime coach and teacher Sharon Ellsworth-Nielsen, who is stepping down as coach this year. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Hi, good to be here.
Thank you, Leslie.
So, Sharon, you've been with the team for how long?
This is my, I'm just finishing up my 6th year as the debate coach.
Okay, but you've been teaching in the high school then, debate classes for how long?
Yes, the first year that I came on, we didn't even have a class, so we began 5 years ago with one class, and then Bob O'Connor went to Treasure to say, let's bring some 8th and 9th graders on. Let's teach these kids these important life skills also. So that's what made the program, the debate program, explode, because we were bringing younger students in. with classes. So we had two classes, then three, and for the last 3 years, we've been functioning with four semester debate classes, upwards of 150 students per year who may not join the debate team, but they're moving through the process and learning debate skills, and they come to us awkward and unsure of themselves, and they leave much more comfortable with presenting themselves and understanding how to organize their argument and how to evaluate the arguments and opinions of others. So it's very valuable.
So how much success have you seen with the team then during your tenure?
Unprecedented, exponential, unexpected. Because of, well, for several reasons, the least of which is me. I know what I don't know. I was a speech person in high school, not a debater. So I knew right off the bat, I need help. So I gathered assistant coaches and people who could help coach the team in debate skills. And my job was basically organizing, because we have phenomenal kids, phenomenal students who have goals and desires in their lives, and they can see that debate can help them. We have amazing teachers at our school, a supportive administration who sees the value in this program and is willing to support it, and a phenomenal parent community who is willing to get behind and do whatever I would ask. If I had a need, I would just reach out to, beyond what the assistant coaches and myself could take care of, I would reach out to parents. So it has grown from 6 years ago, we had maybe 9 to 12 active students. We went to two tournaments. Maybe 5 or 6 students would go. The last 4 years, 3 years especially, we've been operating with 60 to 70 active students attending 7 to 8 tournaments in addition to region and state. And now that we've added, now that the students came to us saying, we want to go to national tournaments, we want, our sights are higher, then we've added 1 to 5 up to 7 additional out-of-state tournaments. Last year, we went to 15 tournaments. Park City had kids in 15 different tournaments.
So is this the first time you've gone to nationals?
No. We sent Katie Kelly clear back in 2014 to nationals. So occasionally, we would send 1 or 2 students. What has happened, though, is that the kids have developed the desire to compete more nationally. This has been driven more by them than by me, certainly, and by the assistant coaches who are also college debaters and can help see the vision of what's possible on that next level. For the last 3 years, for sure, we have sent a pack to national tournaments and to some of the more prestigious tournaments, like the Tournament of Champions, or to those qualifying tournaments in the Tournament of Champions system. We've sent maybe sometimes just 2, possibly 4, maybe 5 students to the smaller, more prestigious. So we're operating on all levels. We're teaching the brand new ninth grader who won't debate on the team but wants the skills, as well as the student who says immediately, I want to go to the Tournament of Champions. That is my goal.
So I think I heard Park City High School is the only Utah school going to nationals this year?
I am not aware of that. I know that we have 2 districts in the national system. I believe we might be the only, from the Great Salt Lake District, I think we are the only team going to. And when we say nationals, there are several circuits. We're talking about the National Speech and Debate Organization Association. They're nationals. That's the one where we're the only ones going from the Great Salt Lake District.
Okay. So, Gavin, my understanding, you are a much decorated team member, and what, graduating Park City High School just last year?
Last year, that's correct. Yeah. I owe it a lot to my teammates. It definitely takes a village. More than anything else, it takes a lot of collaboration between different people on the team. And above all, it takes a coaching staff that's dedicated. And so I owe it a lot to the support of the community who were willing to give us the resources to hire coaches, and give us the resources to travel out of state to qualify for the prestigious tournaments that we were able to attend.
Yeah, so why is this a job that you wanted to take on? I mean, is it a paid job, or are you just doing this?
It's a paid job for me. And again, we owe that to the generosity of the community. But I chose to take this job on because debate is something that I am passionate about. And there is nothing that has had a more profound impact on my life than debate. Not just because it gave me the critical thinking skills, the communicative skills that have allowed me to succeed in college and beyond, but also because it was an incredible community for me. The people who do debate tend to be some of the most compassionate and understanding people out there. Because when you have to debate both sides of an issue constantly, you can't help but develop understanding and empathy and just become a better person. So there are so many reasons that I'm involved, but I'd say those are probably the biggest ones.
Yeah. So what makes a good debater?
Persistence above all else. At my first tournament, I was given the wrong topic. And so I showed up prepared to debate whether or not the government should be able to procure organs without the consent after people have passed. And instead, I showed up to my first round and we were set to debate whether or not civil disobedience in a democracy is justified. I went 0-3. I lost every single round. And it didn't get that much better throughout my first year of debate. But it was something that I was enthralled by. Just the people that I was debating. It was one of the first times in my life that I was surrounded by people who had a passion for some of the same interests as, or some of the same things that I did, and had some shared many of the same interests. And so by being persistent and keeping at it, I was eventually able to succeed. And in my experience, those are the debaters that do well, are the ones who continue to try even when all the odds are stacked against them.
Yeah. So everybody's given, as they head to nationals here, given a topic that they're going to debate, so they've been doing the research?
That's correct.
All right. And again, they do both the pro and con?
That's correct. In fact, a lot of times in the event that I'm coaching right now that I've been working with most recently, it's called Public Forum, they are not going to know which side they're debating in any given round until they show up for the round. They'll flip a coin and the winner decides which side they're debating on. And between the time that they know what side they're debating and when they have to begin speaking, it's maybe 60 seconds.
Leslie, what's mind-blowing, however, is that within debate, there are 4 debate events and 4 speech events. So when we talk about debate, public forum is 1 of 8 events. Policy debate has the same topic all year long. Mm-hmm. So the guidelines and the strategies for policy are different than for public forum. We failed to mention, as we speak right now, we have 2 team members who are taking our program internationally. Mm-hmm. We have 2 members who are in South Africa right now, working with a group to teach them debate skills and try to get them involved in international competition and possibly coming to some of the national tournaments next year in the U.S. So I guess we're international now.
Yeah,
yeah, that's impressive. So how many are you taking to Dallas then?
5 this year.
Okay. And again, they'll be competing in how many different events?
We've qualified in 3 separate events, 5 students.
Okay. And I guess as you look at some of the students, you look at Gavin, I mean, he's a real articulate kid. I mean, is that what you see as a coach?
Gavin is special. He came to us with skills that were super impressive. I would say the same thing about our other college-age assistant coach, Sage Miller. She debated with the University of Utah and it also has amazing skills, which is why we've brought them on, because they have skills that I personally don't. Our students watch them and see how good they are and how effectively they can present themselves and how, I love the point that Gavin makes about compassion. How can you not be more understanding about on any issue of both sides than if you've been forced to debate both sides? So our students look at that, and I've had students tell me, I want to be able to debate like that. We'll have them go at tournaments and watch the older varsity students. If the younger ones have lost their rounds, they're done with competition, it's like, don't just sit and rest. Go and watch the upperclassmen. Go watch the varsity and see what they can do. So we see, you know, just huge talent. And when huge talent and organizational ability comes together with these assistant coaches, with everyone who helps us, then that's just a boon and a blessing. And the Park City debate team is this recipe that has had so many components. I don't know whether our success and the speed with which we went from small to very successful would have happened as quickly in any other place except for somewhere like Park City, with the great support from administration, parents, community, students, everything working together.
So, Gavin, where are you going to school and what are you studying?
I am at the University of Utah studying accounting and economics.
Okay. No desire to go into political office or anything like that?
Well, not entirely. I'm actually also the president of the College Democrats of Utah. So, fittingly enough, I suppose, for a debater.
It seems like that's kind of like your soapbox. Well,
yeah.
Good luck. Let us know how you guys do. And congratulations to you for a great career, Sharon.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks
for coming
Leslie.
In. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.